Sven Sundgaard, of course, is the weather guy extraordinaire. BringMeTheNews.com, Premier Living. You can find his weather forecast there. YouTube as well. He's kind enough to join us, as he has on these Thursdays, to talk a little bit about the weather up in Wisconsin. Where are you at in Wisconsin?
I'm in beautiful Frederick, Wisconsin.
Frederick. It is actually nice. I've been there. It's a nice little town.
Yeah, I'm about to do musical bingo, so you caught me before I've had any beer in me.
I'm glad we got you that one. Congratulations. You called it last week. We indeed did stay warm enough where 2021, the meteorological summer, that's from June 1st to the end of August, was the hottest summer on record.
Yeah, and it wasn't hard to call even a few weeks ago. I started crunching the numbers after the first week of August, just plugging in, the average of computer model data. And then even if we assumed the last week of August was normal temperatures, we still were going to narrowly win. So it was kind of in the bag just because of that heat we had in June, which is just, it just, again, should stand out to people how hot June was. That gave us the running start where nobody could really catch up to us. After July, we were kind of down in the second and third place, and then we got that little burst of heat, remember, a couple weeks ago. Just a couple 90s in the middle of August was enough to push us back into the number one spot. And a lot of people, I've explained this a few times in weather videos and stuff, and I don't know if we've been over here, but the key was that our heat was consistent this summer, because a lot of people are like, wait, how is it hotter than 1988? We had 44 days in the 90s and it was like 100 five times. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. We only, in air quotes, had 26 90s this summer, and we didn't hit 100. We did hit 99. We got close one day. But basically, once we hit June 2nd, it was warmer than normal, or even much warmer than normal, every single day right up until the end of August. In 1988, people remember the heat, of course, but we started June cool and we ended August cool that year. So it was actually in the 60s a couple times for highs. We didn't get anywhere near that cool. And of course, our nights were warmer. And, the thing I'm telling people too is it's not just, wow, it was the hottest summer ever recorded, which is 148 years of records, but the fact that the heat was consistent and we beat out those other years is really the very troubling sign that this is a climate change thing. This is not, we would not have done this without the extra heat in the Northern Hemisphere. And I know you saw my video yesterday and people can go back and watch it. I compared what the Northern Hemisphere looked like in 1988 to this year. It was cooler than average across the Northern Hemisphere in 1988. We just have a surplus of heat. And if you did just a rudimentary analysis, I did it yesterday, subtract the heat that we have in the Northern Hemisphere this year, we would have, instead of had 26 days in the 90s, we would have had 18. And instead of being the hottest summer ever, we probably would have been fourth or fifth hottest. So it still would have been a hot summer, but it would not have been the summer of the caliber that we had.
And it's interesting because the way you just put it, it's like there are some years you get a big, and we have a lot of snow, but it's all one massive snowfall and it just has a regular snowfall year. What would be equivalent of this would be, it's like if we had 3 inches of snow every single stinking day falling from the sky to where it builds up. I mean, then all of a sudden you can say, well, things are changing. That doesn't, that's not supposed to happen like that. And that's what happened. Do you know, did we break the record? I don't know if you're aware of this. Did we break the record for most days over, say, 80 degrees in the summer?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. I can go back and look at that. That would be an interesting stat, because that would show that consistent heat. Because we had a lot of days right around 90, 89, 90 degrees. And that tells you that, oh boy, if just that extra little bit of heat kind of pushed us there. Another thing is our nights were warm. I talked about this a few different times over the course of the summer. Yes, the 90s, and yes, the streaks of 90s were impressive, but also just how incredibly warm the nights were. And not just in the urban heat island, nights are warmer everywhere. And that also is what helped push us up, because we averaged the highs and the lows for all 92 days of the summer. And I've had to explain this a lot over the last few days. People are like, wait, there's still a few weeks of summer, so why don't you tabulate it that way? I'm like, first of all, we like even months for statistics, but also it really does make sense, the meteorological seasons. The astronomical seasons don't make sense when you're looking at weather, when you're looking at temperatures and climate, because June 20th is the peak sun. So really you could make the argument that summer should be probably sometime around May 10th to the end of July. with the peak of the sun in the middle of that. And then because the atmosphere lags the sun, just like preheating an oven, by about a month, then you get June, July, August. So it really does, and then each of the other seasons, it really does make more sense to have June, July, August be summer, because not just in Minnesota, but anywhere, by September 21st or 22nd, it's really not summer anymore from any weather or climate standpoint.
I want to talk about Ida, because what happened in the Northeast is, I'm a little confused because, all right, so Ida hits a bad hurricane. I mean, some of the yep. images of the damage that it did in Louisiana into Mississippi, just terrifying. And yet, but it kind of, you know, it was a tropical depression. It's raining a lot, goes across Tennessee, heads toward the Northeast. What happened to when it got up into Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, that it got supersized again into a massive rain event?
Yeah, so when systems merge, you get that extra energy and extra moisture. And part of the problem, you know, ton of wind damage and a lot of tornadoes out of this yesterday. But really, the troubling thing is the extreme flooding. Because remember, New York City and that whole area got walloped with Henry a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
And they got 5-6 inches of rain. So that ground is saturated. And they got the radar estimates of the last 36 hours in that area are anywhere from 6 to 12 inches of water rainfall. So you add that with the totals of a couple weeks ago, some places have seen a foot and a half of water in 2 weeks. You know, you just can't take that anymore. And especially in an urban area, you know, we see when we get these torrential downpours, haven't seen many this summer, but in the city, it can overwhelm the sewer system because everything's running off of pavement. And, you know, our sewer systems, New York is no different. If anything, it's more outdated. Our sewer systems are not adapted to the changing climate, an atmosphere that holds more water, that has the potential for more extreme rainfall events. So, it got a little boost from extra energy from another system and just the kind of normal energy that would feed thunderstorms like for us, all merging with the leftovers of a tropical system, which still had a ton of moisture. Any of those tropical systems are still carrying a ton of water content and a ton of vorticity, a ton of spin, because the thing is spinning. You can imagine like a top, and then it slows down as it moves over land, and that just creates tons of energy and spin in the atmosphere. So that's why they get a lot of tornadoes when hurricanes make landfall initially, but even as the systems continue to move on. And New York is really a great example of how climate change and these tropical systems merge to create disasters. You know, Hurricane Sandy, you know, we told everybody when Hurricane Sandy happened, this is not going to be unique. This kind of thing is going to be happening more and more frequently. And I don't think most of us even thought it would be happening as frequently as it has. Two of these systems in one summer, you know, and then Sandy. This is really troubling. And, you know, how do you update the infrastructure of a city like New York to adapt to a changing climate? I know I had retweeted AOC this morning, who, regardless of if you agree with the Green New Deal or anything, she has a point. You know, people said we can't spend this money to adapt our infrastructure. Well, what's more expensive, dealing with a disaster or trying to mitigate it and get ahead of it?
Yeah, it's the wrong way to do it, to try to do everything on the backside, to always kind of, if I may, ask for forgiveness as opposed to ask please beforehand. And I think we have to get that mentality when it comes to these things. And it also should be mentioned, yeah, if you're in New York City, you're in Philadelphia, any wetlands that used to be there, that used to absorb this water and does fairly well, they're long gone. And so you've got 10 feet of concrete on top of those and filled in lands and harbors that have been expanded. So you really, I mean, when you look at New York City particularly, there is a recipe for disaster there, because there's, you know, as you say, this is a city that is easily prone to flooding. And we're just realizing when we start seeing more and more of these events that New York City itself is going to be a city that they're going to have to fix this somehow.
Yeah, and it's a perfect storm. It was a wet summer there, so the ground, unlike here, is already saturated, and they got Henry, and now the leftovers of Ida. And that's partly why Ida was such a mess in Louisiana, too. They've had a very wet summer there, too.
Yeah.
Parts of Louisiana are a foot and a half above normal for annual rainfall. I mean, that's just atrocious. And, of course, it's flat as a pancake, and some of it's below sea level, and you get a major hurricane like this. And you know, we're not quite at the peak of hurricane season yet in the Atlantic. So there's a lot of time to get through here over the next several weeks.
I got a question for you, a listener who very much is very happy that you do visit with us, and I am as well very grateful that you have some time with us. Sven Sundgaard, of course, joining us, bringmeinthenews.com. She had a question about something you'd mentioned about conditions getting better for forest fires, and it sounds like things have actually turned around a little bit up in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, and they're reopening up some of the boundary waters this weekend. The other fire there, the Greenwood fire, they're expecting to have that completely wrapped up, hopefully contained by October latest. But she had the question, she says, okay, obviously rain does help, but if it's not been raining a lot, what other conditions? She was asking about humidity. How does that make fighting fires easier and better?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Rain is very obvious. And I think a lot of people would be surprised that, you know, light rain showers coming through a big fire almost have zero impact on the fire itself if there's not people fighting there. So we have to tip our hats and whatever else, give raises to all these fire crews out there doing this just insane work out there. Because, yeah, when they get days that are like this, if it's cloudy, cooler, relative humidities are higher, it allows them to fight the fire because the fire isn't spreading as quickly. You know, when you get, you know, what we saw a couple times last week was as things heated up during the day, automatically the relative humidity drops. You know, if you keep the moisture content the same, you heat up the air, the humidity is going to drop because the humidity is a percentage of the water in the air compared to what it can hold at that temperature. When you raise the temperature, that percentage goes down. That means that the air is absorbing more moisture potentially. There's more evaporation happening, so things dry very quickly. And when it's in the sun and you add the wind, those are all horrible conditions. So if you can reverse all of those variables, decrease the winds, increase the humidity, get rid of the sun, that allows them to really attack the fire because it's just not spreading at the same pace. It's when they get these explosive eruptions and spreading of fires that they just can't. There's no way to keep up with that. It's just you have to just watch it burn and wait for the weather to change. But they did also, on top of the Greenwood fire last week, and get about 1 to 2 inches of rain, which was huge. And basically you could see it go from no containment to jumping up to about 37%, and now, yeah, getting to the point of almost completely having that fire contained, all because they got, just thank God, got some good downpours right on top of that fire. Now, north of there, where there are some other fires, they got a much less rainfall, and overall northeastern Minnesota saw a fraction of the rain that we did last weekend. So the Twin Cities now is out of those extreme categories of drought, severe and extreme, to just moderate drought now, all because of the rain we had last week. August was above normal. We went into the top 10 wettest August after that incredibly dry period. But in northern Minnesota was not the same scenario.
And when you bring up fires that are out of control, look at what's going on in California. I mean, it's almost like the fire crews out there, they do everything in their power to try to get some of those massive fires under control, and it just is nothing they can do because the conditions there it wants to burn.
Yeah. You know, I did an interview with an organization yesterday, and they asked me to pick the like five of the worst weather states to live in as far as danger and disaster, and California was one of those. All the Gulf states, because I said whatever you get there can last. You know, if you're in a flood situation in Louisiana, it can keep flooding because they don't get a drastic change in the seasons. You know, whereas here we saw this firsthand. We can get into a bad drought, but the season does change inevitably, no matter what. You know, July is not going to last forever here. Winter does come eventually, and so if you have fires raging, that's going to change the game. California has a natural fire season that lasts for months, and they're in the middle of it right now. So, well, you know, if you're sitting in Ely and it was very dry as it was a month ago, you can say, well, it's going to rain eventually. It will rain at some point in the next month or two. If you're in California, there's no guarantee of that. You don't just bust the drought. If anything, the droughts get worse and worse because rainfall is decreasing overall through the year. They really rely on the winter months only for moisture. And yeah, so they're in the thick of it. The conditions only continue to be bad at this time of year there.
Going back to Minnesota and coming up with looking at this weekend, speaking of rain, Gophers, Ohio State tonight, they're playing in rain. It looks like the rain's going to come in here early enough to where it's going to play a factor in the game. How much rain are we going to get in this next stretch?
Anywhere from about a half inch to maybe a few lucky places will get an inch. And yeah, the showers are there's some very light rain falling Lake Minnetonka right now. This rain has had a hard time making its way east of the day, but it's starting to make some progress. So, yeah, they might have some light rain, but, you know, is that anything worth stopping a football game for? I don't know.
Not at all. It's not like baseball
where they get they're afraid of it. Yeah. No, there isn't a lot of lightning in it right now, so that's good. At least the initial couple of hours should just be a fairly light rain, because they're really trying to moisten up the atmosphere. We had some pretty dry air, not just the surface, but in the aloft the last couple of days. And so this plume of moisture has been working its way east. So, yeah, I would say most of us are going to about a half inch. But you know, if you're in the western suburbs, you could end up with an inch. But further west, west central Minnesota, you know, out towards Wilmer, Alexander, that's where it could add up to 2 inches plus. It's been raining there all day today and will continue to rain through the night tonight. So that's where they're going to get more. But nobody's going to get the kind of totals that we had last week out of this.
Will it clear out for the Labor Day weekend?
I think most of it will. Tomorrow will be crummy. You know, I think a good day to be traveling if you're headed somewhere. It's going to be dreary. I don't think a lot of rain tomorrow, but there will be a few showers around, especially in the morning. There could still be some scattered light rain. But the afternoon should be just kind of dreary, cloudy, sort of like it is now. You know, we didn't hit 70 today, too, which, by the way, is a milestone. The last time we haven't hit 70 degrees was Memorial Weekend. May 30th was the last day in the 60s. So we have that going for us. I don't know that we'll hit 70 tomorrow either. So that would be two in a row, which the last time we did that was Memorial Weekend. But, yeah, I think we could start Saturday with some clouds, but I think it will come out for the afternoon. Sunday looks mostly sunny, Monday too, and the temperatures will reflect that as well, probably mid-70s Saturday, mid to maybe upper 70s Saturday, or Sunday rather, in Labor Day, with a few spots in southwestern Minnesota popping back into the 80s. And there could be a warming, slow warming trend through the week next week. So we are not done with summer temperatures yet, not that I don't think anybody thought after this summer that we would be.
Sven Sundgaard, of course, the weather forecaster at bringmeinthenews.com, Premier Living, also at YouTube. Sven, have fun tonight. You it sounds like you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, it's. I think the music category is 80s. I don't know how I'll do, but whatever.
Okay.
I'll update you next week.
I might be at the Chainsmokers tonight over at the State Fair. Text me if you have any tough ones, because trust me, as a guy who works in radio and that grew up in the 80s, if I can help you, I'll do my best, okay?
I was a mere, I don't know.
All right. Sven Sundgaard, thank you very much. Have a great night. We'll take a break. Come on.